Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire was produced by the Groundwire National Coordination Team on the traditional territories of the Mississaugas of the New Credit. I'm your host, Ome Salma Rahimtula. In this episode,
publicly expressing my concerns about so much about what's going on about this pipeline, concerns about consultation, the concerns about the, in particular, the wealth of knowledge that we as Indigenous people of the lands have.
People who said that they ate more fish had twice the higher mercury concentrations in their umbilical cord, and if in addition their father was a fishing guide, it was four times more.
There's several components to our action plan that together make up a development plan, a community development plan for the west of St. Henry.
But first, here are the headlines.
This coming Thursday, June 7th, Ontario residents will go to the polls to vote for their next premier. Incumbent Premier Kathleen Wynne is facing strong opposition from the NDP's Andrea Horwath and the Progressive Conservatives' Doug Ford. In a shocking declaration on Saturday, Premier Wynne said that it was unlikely that she would be re-elected as Premier and encouraged Ontarians to elect Liberal candidates to prevent the NDP or PCs from securing a majority. Conceding the election 5 days before Election Day came as a shock to many and was seen as a last-ditch effort for the Liberals to maintain their official party status. If the Liberals fail to win at least 8 seats, which some polls suggest might be the case, they will no longer be formally recognized at Queen's Park, which means they won't get to sit on committees to debate legislation, and they have to compete to ask a question of the government during question period. In the past week, polls have not been consistent in a confident outcome of the election, which means the last week on the campaign trail will be a tight race between the NDP and PCs. PC candidate Ford, the brother of the late mayor of Toronto, Rob Ford, is running a Trump-style campaign, and several PC candidates across the province have been called out for their racism and sexism. The NDP has been running their campaign on promises of increased health care coverage and the converting of student loans to grants. Ontarians take to the polls on Thursday, June 7th, in one of the most contested elections in recent Ontario history.
Our next headline comes from Michael Welsh of radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, who was present at the 2018 Winnipeg Pride Parade.
On the late morning of Sunday, June 3rd, thousands gathered on the grounds of the Manitoba Legislature to participate in Winnipeg's 31st annual Pride Parade. This year's festival was notable for breaking new inclusive ground with the introduction of 2018 Grand Marshal Brielle Barity Linklater, a two-spirited, transgendered Cree woman and activist from Thompson, Manitoba. Her speech before the start of the march addressed the unique challenges faced by queer people of color and of the need for white allies to make room for those voices, both in political conversations and on the streets.
I've watched the last decade white queer people appropriate black women, you know, that whole black independent woman motto. It just so happens when a black person actually displays anger and fierceness, that people will hate on that person. And I've received the same because today I'm angry.
Some people don't realize how much we actually truly struggle and the many barriers that we face here in society with housing inequality, with the lack of job security, and with the support that we don't all get from our families. And that's why during my speech I say oftentimes we are not runaways but throwaways. And I want to honor those people who have been struggling, who have been doing this longer than I have, because it's because of them I know that I can survive, I can get through anything, and I want to be a champion for those people and the next generation as well.
Other details of this year's Pride Festival can be found at www.pridewinnipeg.com.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this.
Take a million lock bear. Hey! Our host, and these are the
heard Mr. Thai by the Black Bear Singers from their album Notsimit, which won Best Powwow Contemporary Album at the 2018 Indigenous Music Awards on May 18th. Welcome back to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up. Available online at groundwirenews.ca and airing on your community radio station. Now it's time for our feature stories. Our first feature comes from Chris Cook at CFUV in Victoria, British Columbia, who attended a protest this past weekend against the Canadian government's decision to buy the controversial Trans Mountain Pipeline. The event was put together by the Salish Sea Organizing Collective in conjunction with several social justice and environmental organizations.
No pipeline bailout is the slogan. On May 29th, Canada's finance minister announced the federal government would buy out Kinder Morgan's troubled Trans Mountain Pipeline. Land and sea defenders are mobilizing across British Columbia, and today, May 31st, they've manifested here in the provincial capital, Victoria. I'm going down to talk to some of the people here. There's a lively gathering already. You could start just telling me what your name is and why you're here.
So Wake Kwaitip, the Rissel Koyan's Quest. I'm also known as La Loya. That's a traditional name given to me from my family from the Stadtlium territory. I'm also Shuetmuk from the northern part of our territory. Shuetmuk means the spread out people. I am an honored and delighted guest of the Wasanik speaking people, the Songhees and the Squamalt. I'm a new resident of Victoria. And now that I'm no longer out in the bush living on reserve, it's I can be out here in public, publicly expressing my concerns about so much about what's going on about this pipeline, concerns about consultation, the concerns about the, in particular, the wealth of knowledge that we as Indigenous people of the lands have. In my grandfather's language, in the Shwetmustine language, we have a term, yuchamimim, that means that we're caretakers, we're the stewards of the land since time immemorial. A steward of the land means that we know what's going on, we know when it needs to be tended to. And albeit I am a guest here, I can see that this area needs to be tended to. And I know it's not because my my Songhees or my Squamish brothers and sisters are neglecting. It's because they're not being listened to just as much as anywhere else we go. We're not being heard. We're pushed aside. We're not able to do what we need to do. And I know that to do what we need to do for our lands, for our waters, for our air, we need to unite. So that's why I came out today, is because I need to be an ally to our non-Indigenous brothers and sisters as much as I need you to be an ally to me today.
Well, I'm standing amongst a school of inflatable orca whales. The orca is a big part of the scene here in the lower island. They're threatened, of course, the southern residents more than any, and it's a big part of why people come out and why they're opposed to this. First, can you first tell me what your name is and tell me why you're down here today?
Okay, my name's Greg McElroy. I'm a director of the Canadian Orca Rescue Society. We're down here to protect the orcas in the southern resident pod off of Vancouver Island. We want to do that by protecting their waters to make sure the waters stay clean. That's the home they live in. We are also supportive of salmon enhancement on the coast, and we want to see our federal government support us and not be against us. And by buying the pipeline from American oil interests using Canadian taxpayers' money without permission from Canadians is wrong.
So you want to tell me what your name is and why you're down here?
Well, my name's Ted Smith, and I'm appalled that our federal government would bail out the pipeline and this industry. It's ridiculous.
Hey, oh,
marchers now are heading up Wharf Street. This is in the heart of Victoria's tourist area. There's many hundreds of people here. And from all walks, so to speak, I think if any sentiment resounded, most notably for me at least, was the anger expressed against the Prime Minister. For Groundwire, this is Chris Cook in Victoria.
Voices you heard in that feature were La Loya, Greg McElroy, Ted Smith, and Bobby Arbus. The people of Grassy Narrows First Nation have known for decades that the ill health of its residents has been connected to mercury contamination of one of their main food sources. But federal and provincial authorities have been slow to respect this understanding. Now, Indigenous leaders are hopeful that a new comprehensive survey of the health of community members may finally push both levels of government into taking responsible action on their behalf. Michael Welsh of CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg brings us this report.
On Thursday, May 24th in downtown Toronto, members of Grassy Narrows First Nation in northwestern Ontario authorized the release of results of a survey that provides the most comprehensive evidence yet that consuming fish from the English Wabagoon River system polluted by mercury half a century ago has had a deleterious effect on the health of individuals in the community. The Community Health Assessment Report, commissioned by Grassy Narrows, was headed by Dr. Donna Mergler, Professor Emerita at the Université du Québec à Montréal, and a member of a World Health Organization-affiliated research group.
60 people reported who participated in the survey have been told by a health professional that they have mercury poisoning. 80% report that they ate fish at least several times a week as children. 93% report that their father was a fishing guide.
What we showed in the report was, firstly, that the health and well-being and socioeconomic status of Grassy Narrows is worse than that of other First Nations in Ontario and in Canada. People who said that they ate more fish had twice a higher mercury concentrations in their umbilical cord, and if in addition their father was a fishing guide, it was four times more. So that confirmed that the proxy of that we were using fish consumption as a proxy for mercury exposure, and that indeed people did remember how much fish they had eaten, and we were able to use it to examine how fish consumption, particularly in childhood, was affecting their health today.
32% of community members report having a friend who committed suicide versus 7% for other First Nations in Ontario.
Suicidal ideation was twice as high and than in other First Nations, and we all know that it's already high in other in First Nations across Canada. It's 75% of people who have thought about suicide, attempt suicide, whereas in other First Nations, it's 50%. Still bad, but not as bad as Grassy.
When would you expect, normally, that a study of this kind would be triggered?
Well, I have read all the scientific and literature and reports on the health of Grassy Narrows, or as many as I could get my hands on. Every one of these reports, or almost everyone, has said what is needed in Grassy Narrows is a comprehensive study of the health of the community. And the first time I read it in a document that was written in 1970, and the person they were quoting was a physician who had been to Grassy Narrows. It was never done.
I've been to so many meetings where not one word was uttered about mercury poisoning or Minamata disease.
Judy Da Silva is a mother and grandmother from Grassy Narrows. She also serves as the community's environmental health coordinator.
Yeah, in a non-Indigenous community, it would have been faster. The same as Walkerton, like their compensation came in a very short time. The scales of justice are really different for Indigenous communities than non-Indigenous.
What is the main takeaway for government, for legislators, both provincially and federally?
One of the things that I really like about her recommendations is the mercury passport, where it will show a person's mercury readings from past studies, and it'll be all in one little booklet, like a passport size, and it'll show that this person has this much level of mercury in their body, and then the healthcare system has to be able to adapt to that mercury passport, like to feed our people better in the healthcare system, because it's really racist to our people. So maybe when they see that mercury passport, it will help them feed our people more humanely.
A second part of the study relating to the health and well-being of Grassy Narrows children is to be released at a later date following its presentation to the community. Reporting from Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabe Akin, the homeland of the Métis and the traditional territories of the Nahiyawak and the Nakota, this is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
Voices you heard in that feature were Michael Welch, Donna Mergler, and Judy De Silva. Our final feature comes from CKUT in Montreal. Gentrification in Montreal's Saint-Henri borough is rapidly progressing westward. While condos, cafes, and luxury restaurants are becoming commonplace, rents are rising and low-income tenants are being displaced by its so-called beautification and revitalization of a neighborhood steeped in working-class history. CKUT brings you voices from a demonstration against gentrification in Saint-Henri, organized by Paupière Comité Logement.
My name is Shannon Franson, and I'm the coordinator of Solidarity St. Henry, which is the coalition of community groups that are active in St. Henry. Solidarity St. Henry has existed for more than 30 years now, and I've been the coordinator for the past 8 years, so since 2010. You can really tell that the neighborhood has changed significantly. We see it especially on the commercial streets like Notre-Dame and main streets that used to have really accessible businesses like a small dépanneur with a post office and small restaurants that were accessible to just about anybody in the neighborhood. And now we see that Notre-Dame has really changed. There's some very, very luxury businesses and extremely expensive restaurants, even as far west as De Courcelles and Saint-Rémy, which has historically been part of the neighborhood that was home to a lot of really low-income families.
I used to live in the Plateau Mont-Royal. I had a nice place there, but the rent kept rising. I had to move, and I chose Saint-Henri because at the time, 1995, 1996, the rents were affordable in Saint-Henri, but they didn't stay affordable for very long. I had a young son at the time. We moved into a not very good place. There was a lot of problems with mushrooms and vermin. So I went to the Paupière Comité Logement and I asked, can you help me find a decent place to live? And it took 3 years, but they found me a co-op. So now I live in that co-op for the past 20 years in Saint-Henri, and the rent is fixed. I pay 25% of my income. When I moved in, I was on welfare. Now I work part-time, and my rent will probably move up a little bit. But it's what allows me to breathe, this co-op. I couldn't function in Montreal. I would have to move out of town.
Together, all sorts of different organizations that have very different missions have put together in sort of a multifaceted action plan to try and mitigate the impacts of gentrification on a whole bunch of different levels. So it's pretty inspiring to see them try to deal with a phenomenon that many people would say you can't do anything about, and to see that organizations in St. Henry don't buy that, and we're trying to do things together.
My name is Olivier Prudhomme-Richard. I work at the Paupière as a community organizer. I work especially more in the Little Burgundy, but we also have a community organizer, Patricia, who works in Saint-Henri. We especially target this neighborhood because in the last few years it's been like mostly gentrified. And the East was already like a lot of gentrified. If we say between the Groupe Metro and Place Saint-Henri, it's like most of the apartments are not affordable anymore. But here in the West, there's still apartments who are still affordable, not in good shape, but still affordable. There's many projects. The biggest one that we have these days is the Canada Malting. It's like a corner from here. It was also a symbol of the neighborhood, and especially gentrification, because what happened, the first condos that were built in Tenerife were actually all manufactured, well, have been transformed into condos. And one actually, the kind of a loss, but we win a little bit of social housing, but it was kind of the beginning of the real fight for social housing. It was the tobacco, Imperial Tobacco. It was on, as I remember, Saint-Jacques Street. And it was worse than Canada Malting because at the time people, actually the factory just closed. So there were people that used to work there and now would be transferred into condos. And that's the last one we have, so we really want to fight for it.
One of the main ones that we can see here from where we're doing this interview, which is the to take over the Canada Malting site for a community-based project that would involve several hundred units of social housing and also projects that respond to the community's needs. One of the exciting components of that project is sort of a what we say in French, a pôle de production alimentaire, or a project that would generate food for the neighborhood that we could then sell at a community grocery store that we're also trying to establish along Notre Dame Street in an abandoned building that used to be a library and that belongs to the city. So there's several components to our action plan that together make up a development plan, a community development plan for the west of St. Henry that's pretty comprehensive, and we call it in French our plan de développement populaire.
That's it for our features. You are listening to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up, available online at groundwirenews.ca and airing on your local community radio station. Now it's time for our community radio report. The National Campus and Community Radio Association's annual conference, the NCRC, will run this year from June 6th to the 10th, hosted by CHSR in Fredericton, New Brunswick. Our community radio report this week takes a look at what the NCRC has planned for this year and some of the issues on the forefront of the community campus radio sector across the country.
The National Campus and Community Radio Association's annual conference is an opportunity for campus and community radio stations across the country to gather and exchange ideas, challenges, and good energy. It also allows for the NCRA to hold their annual general meeting of member stations to decide on policy changes and objectives for the coming year. Each year, a different station hosts the week-long conference, and this year, delegates will gather in Fredericton, New Brunswick at radio station CHSR. Mark Kilfoyle is the program director at CHSR.
Well, we are definitely excited to host the conference. I've had the luck to be able to go to conferences for the last 7 years or so, and very impressed and happy to meet everybody. That's probably the biggest thing for me, actually, is getting a chance to meet folks who are doing similar work across the country. And a few years ago, we said, well, why don't we host it? It's been quite a while since our name was on the list. It was probably a bit ambitious, but that's kind of the way we do things. We take on big projects and see what we can do. And it was an interesting challenge. And I'm very much looking forward to hosting. It's been a very big challenge, but a very interesting thing to do that's very different.
Member stations across Canada and interested community members propose workshops and presentations that make up the content for the week-long conference.
All 3 days of the main conference are very much packed with some great discussions. We've gotten some great session presentations from people coming to the conference, as well as being able to bring in a few people from the local area. We have a couple of people who are going to be speaking. In particular, Bob Mergereau is going to be speaking. He's well-known as a music journalist from across the country. He's going to be speaking on the album concept and why it's still important in the digital age. We have Matt Carter, who's the creator of Grid City Magazine, an online magazine that talks about the arts community and the community of Fredericton. He's going to be giving a speech on that. And Peter Rowan, who is an artist and manager for several bands, is going to be talking about that music industry as well. So we're not looking at having huge names. Those are all very respected people, of course, in their field. Gennarji O'Sullivan is also going to be giving a bit of a opening speech as well. I think that we wanted to focus more on having sessions and having more opportunities for people to speak to each other rather than trying to have any sort of celebrity that would be drawing in, because I find that can also be distracting. If the conference is meant to be a working conference, then that's the more important part to focus on.
The National Campus and Community Radio Association this year has proposed several workshops addressing the increasingly vocalized issues of sexism and access within the campus community radio sector. Though the sector was founded and sustained in its early days by Indigenous, people of color, and other marginalized voices, the sector has seen an increased commercialized and mainstream presence, which was reflected at the conference in previous years. The NCRA board president acknowledged in a statement that during the 2017 conference, quote, "There were incidents of racism and discrimination that occurred at this year's conference. The NCRA takes this issue seriously and deems these behaviors totally unacceptable, because it is in the interest of our members to ensure a welcoming and inclusive environment for all to participate, unquote. Well, the NCRA hasn't planned any workshops to address the slated issue of racism at this year's conference. They have scheduled workshops on other issues of access and equity within the sector, such as avoiding burnout and nonprofit radio and sexism. Time's Up for Radio 2 is a workshop that will address sexual harassment in campus community radio. The description of the workshop online states that over one quarter of stations responding to a national survey reported cases of sexual harassment or misconduct at their stations in the past 2 years. The NCRA's equity officer did not reply to multiple requests to comment about equity issues at this year's conference. The national conference, though, isn't all workshops and meetings. This being community radio, there are always bands invited to play at the conference and an opportunity to expose the host city's alternative and independent talent to delegates from across the country. This year, CHSR added a twist to the standard band performance format.
One of the things I'm very happy about that we were able to do, and all credit goes to Aaron Bond, our station manager, who is a whiz and knows all of these bands personally, really. But she organized a series of lunchtime performances. We're going to have one or two performers. Usually, I think it's actually only one each time. And so those small intimate performances, I think, are going to wow a lot of people. Just a very different kind of background element for a lot of people while they eat. Well, I mean, we're very much looking forward to being able to showcase Fredericton. We're very much looking forward to showcasing music from across the province. We've had a lot of fun and happiness to be able to support both the venues and the artists in many, many ways. And so we're very happy to show those off for everybody.
The National Campus and Community Radio Conference will run from June 6th to 10th. To find out more, visit ncra.ca.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced by the Groundwire National Coordination Team. Music this week was by the Black Bear Singers from their album Nutsimik. We thank all of our contributors, as well as Mick Sweetman and Gretchen King. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station, or download at groundwirenews.ca.